Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. We're going to be ranking a game we nominated for ourselves, Oregon Trail Deluxe.
Basically, your whole goal is to get from Missouri to Oregon.
If you get to the end, it doesn't matter how much of your family dies as long as you're there, right?
Well, it actually does matter if you're playing for score, because having everyone is about 2,000 points.
It's 1992. I'm in the computer lab at my school. What I'm playing for is to not be reading or doing anything else. So I'm playing, for that. And then also you get to leave funny tombstones when your kids die. So that's like the real reward of the game, is when your kid dies of dysentery, you get to say, like, Boogerman died of dysentery.
Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
Yeah. Yeah. No. For some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge and lay maintain with a course aimed at colleges. To HG 101, we give the honor. Thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Booker Hart and others discuss and discover all the 47,000 games. And when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure. And look, they wrote a book about it. Go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
I don't know.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the latest and greatest, possibly, who knows, episode of Hardcore Gaming 101's podcast. This time, we're going to be talking about Final Fantasy VI, or as it was known to me back in the day, Final Fantasy III for the Super Nintendo. It was nominated by @GaelicRocks. He or she is back on Twitter. And this game was developed by Squaresoft and published by Squaresoft. As I said, for the Super Nintendo, earliest release date and territory appears to be April 2nd, 1994 in Japan. Who's with me to talk Final Fantasy VI?
I'm Clay.
I'm Slow Beef.
And?
I'm Word on the Wind.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining me for this. This is one of my favorite, it is probably my favorite classic RPG, JRPGs. Definitely my favorite JRPG Super Nintendo game. Favorite RPG for the Super Nintendo would be Draken.
Of which I'm the only one here who's actually beaten it.
You say that. I smashed mine with a hammer, so I technically beat it.
I did it just for the tunes.
Don't even know what you're talking about.
Fake nerd.
That telepath.
Just imagine slap bass in mode 7 as far as the eye can see.
And psychedelic colors. Don't forget that.
Final Fantasy VI. So perhaps you've heard of the Final Fantasy series. At this time, in the United States, this was the third one, unless you count the Game Boy versions, which I kind of shouldn't. Fourth one, I'm sorry, because you got to count Mystic Quest. But
there was a point in my life when I felt like it was unimaginable that there'd be a Final Fantasy game that I did not play.
I know, how weird is that? And I don't even know how many Final Fantasy games there are right now. It's always been a weird series in a sense. Like, it's kind of the exact opposite of Dragon Quest, because it's like Dragon Quest, you always know what you're going to get. Final Fantasy, you don't really. I mean, it's always going to be a Final Fantasy game. Which basically means, like, you can summon Bahamut and I don't know what else. Like, anything
there'll
after
be a
that, anything good.
Well, no, that even Gil is kind of...
Yeah, there's, right. Usually a Cid somewhere.
I mean, it's interesting, I think, to think of, like, how different the East and Western experience is for this. Because, like, Final Fantasy in the U.S. anyway, like, it leaped and bounded over prequels, like Mystic Quest notwithstanding. Like, 2 was so much bigger in scope and scale than 1.
Yeah.
And 2 had, like, this story. Like, because before then, most RPG stories were typically, like, you go save the princess or kill the dragon lord, maybe both, but that's it. That's your quest. And, yeah, right. keys, yeah. maybe you get keys along the way.
Like, if you're one of the 25 people in North America who play Dragon Warrior 4, maybe you had something to go on here.
I don't want to, like, because we can go forever on the Palamazi series, but, like, you have to understand, too, because some people say FF4 doesn't hold up, but, like, growing up, every RPG was pretty much like you start in the throne room and the king's like, here's a dialogue box, just read what you're going to do for the next, like, 40 hours, kind of.
Yeah.
And Final Fantasy IV opens with this fade-in of, like, airships going across a Mode 7 world.
Oh, yeah.
You don't know Nobu.
Go to the moon.
You don't know Nobu Uematsu yet, but oh, you will.
Oh, you will. You will, my friend. You will know him intimately.
The Red Wings have a very infamous theme song.
Yeah.
And for good reason.
Characters jump in. We can, yeah, and like I said, I can go on forever.
We can go on forever, but so, I mean, it's interesting because it's like it does grow up a lot in that.
Yeah.
And that had me. That had me by the short and curlies, my friends. I was way into that. I'm just like, you go to the moon, as we said. You meet dwarves, lolly ho. There are kids who die, good riddance. And there are ninjas. There's everything.
And then 3, right?
Yeah, and then 3. But the thing is like, here's the interesting part. I knew about Final Fantasy V because I had a Japanese kid in my my fourth grade class, I believe, third or fourth grade. There was a Japanese company in my hometown, and they would send their kids to our pathetic, terrible Midwestern elementary school to basically just sit there and do their homework for their Saturday school because they already knew everything else. And so while he was doing, like, you know, basic algebra and stuff in the third grade, in between that, he would draw out every single different class version for each of the characters in Final Fantasy V. Oh, and we recognize the character design, like the little, like, you know, the yeah. little chibi guys, right? We recognize it from Final Fantasy II or IV. And we're like, oh my God. So we ask him all these questions. And yeah, so long story short, got invited to birthday parties and stuff over at his house and played a lot of crazy cool Super Famicom games that didn't get to see over here ever. So, yeah, but I was aware that there were other Final Fantasy games. And so when Final Fantasy III came out, I was like, ready. I was ready for this. Ready.
And I think what's so stunning is, like, it trades fantasy for kind of like some kind of punk. I don't know, steampunk, something. And
Steam magic, you know, punk.
Yeah, and it's like really like it was like kind of a risk-taking series suddenly.
It is super high concept. It starts out with 3 like kind of robo suits marching through like an endless like wasteland of snow and ice towards a village, and the main character is one of those people, and she does something I believe she does something relatively terrible, right?
Well, she like, yeah, they like plow through this town. Like, yeah. They're the Empire, and you get the feeling they're not great. But then, like, something happens early on where you learn she's wearing a slave crown in the translation, right?
So much of this amazingly comes from, it's very Star Wars-esque, I think. And I find it interesting because Final Fantasy II did kind of like the beginning of like Star Wars Episode 7, right? Where it's like the stormtroopers show up and torch a village, and there's one guy who like can't really jive with that. And it's kind of like the same thing.
It's like the same. Squaresoft, you guys have a lawsuit on your hands.
No, I mean, they really have. But then they'll just be like, but Biggs and Wedge, my God, people.
Yeah.
What were you thinking?
Except they didn't get called that in the FFP release. Bixen, they got called Vix and Wedge.
Vix and Wedge, yeah, whatever. So it's like the crazy thing is when you look back at Final Fantasy VI now, story-wise, it seems cliche because Final Fantasy VII did basically the same thing.
Yeah. We don't have to worry about spoilers, I'm assuming. Right?
No, I don't think so. So the idea is that there's like this magical realm out there in the world of espers, right? Anybody know where the word espers comes from?
It's no. ESP.
It's like supposed to be someone who is sensitive to ESP.
I thought I was cool, but I was not. Yeah, that's correct. because Japanese people tend to pronounce acronyms rather than just stating them out, you know, letter by letter. That's where it comes from.
Cool? So,
Esp, I did. I don't know why. Look,
you thought you were cool, but you were from Jersey.
I did. Well, it's not. That's cool, that's the least. That's the least of my problems. If you think being from Jersey is what's holding me back, my friend, you have not met me in person.
thank you, Word.
Yeah. So, you're welcome. But it's yeah. So the idea was that there was this, like, you know, other realm of magical beings, espers, that were kind of, I don't remember exactly what happened to them, but basically they were sealed up and sealed away, but they're the source of all magic in the world. And you meet the first character you have, the kind of the star of the game, as it were, is depending on what version of the game you're playing or what translation is, Tifa or Terra.
Tina.
She's,
yeah.
Tina in Japan.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I thought you meant Tifa, like, for real. I was like, whoa, I never knew that far.
Speaking of FF7.
Yes, that's why.
Yeah, yeah. Tina. Yeah, Tina or Terra. Yeah, that's
because
right.
Tina
Sorry,
is
not
a,
Tifa. Right.
Is a magical sounding name to the Japanese.
Tifa's
not so much to us, particularly since that's my mother's name.
Well, that's why they switched it to Terra.
That's why, yeah, like, it wasn't otherworldly.
Because it was your mother's name?
Yeah, exactly. Actually, Squaresoft just gave us a phone call one day.
Hey, is it cool?
You are so very sorry.
Are you the kid who paid like $90 for Final Fantasy II? What's your mom's name?
Square offices in Jersey.
Yeah. Well, they are. Yeah, that's right. See? Now it all comes back. So, yeah, I mean, it's like, and that's basically it. Like, and you've got an evil clown who takes,
you know,
over.
That came later, actually.
That was a really cool thing about it, right? Because, right. Like, Emperor Gestal is the quote-unquote big bad, and Kefka seems like comic relief at first when you meet him.
Right.
Like, Edgar totally jumps down into his sin. I'm using all the English names. Fuck everybody.
Yeah.
Yes.
Gets chumpetized when the castle sinks into the desert for some reason.
Yeah.
It's really cool. Son of a Submariner. It's got a great, the original translation is fantastic. I think it's a Ted Woolsey joint.
Yep.
Yep.
It's a famous one.
It's really, really good.
The only man to have ever used the word stymie in a localization script.
It's controversial, that. Right? Because he took so many liberties with it. Right?
Yes. It doesn't.
And it makes the game so much better.
Well, if you play, I think the best translation is probably objectively the GBA version, but it keeps a lot of his stuff in it there.
So there's Tomato Clyde Mandolin, who did the Mother 3 translation, is actually doing a really, really good series right now where he streams the game and he actually ROM hacked it in a way that you can see all the translations, meaning the original Japanese, the Woosley version, the GBA version, and then Google Translate. And then he's fluent enough, seriously, that he'll, like, explain everything. And it actually is really interesting. And there's, like, there are actually, like, really big, just out-and-out mistakes that they make. But nothing that, like, when I say that, I don't mean, like, oh, you don't know the story of FF6. But, like, stuff where it's, like, he's, like, no, there's a common translation mistake. They really, like, if you play FF6 again, there are, like, certain sentences that don't quite make sense or don't really work really well. One-offs, though, not like anything where, you know, but...
So, like, you compare, like, Super Nintendo RPGs, and this is the thing I always love to give Final Fantasy VI, is, like, those are, like, rare in Final Fantasy VI, whereas they're all over the place in just about every English RPG we got on Super Nintendo, and it really cannot be overstated how good the translation for this game, like, reads, especially for the time.
There's also, by the way, a fan translation of VI, which, they don't bring that...
Fan translation.
It's not, yeah, there's other liberties taken, I'll say that. Like, it's got its own sort of space. GBA, I think, is generally considered, though, the at most quote-unquote accurate and best, you know?
Yeah, it's a little dry. That's the version I played, kind of reminding ourselves about everything in this game.
If you're going to play it without having, if you're going to play the game for the first time, that's probably the version to play, the GBA version.
Yeah.
Just try not to think about how much better the music is on the Super Nintendo.
I played this game originally on Anthologies.
Which wasn't bad, except for the load times, I think.
Well, you see, when you grow up with a PlayStation, you don't think about those load times.
No,
I never had
a
Super Nintendo, so I'm like, oh, this is just normally how games load. And then I play the Super Nintendo, I'm like, my God, I could beat this game in, like, not 1,000 hours.
Yeah, that's like, I remember I got Anthology because it's like, you know, there's like, oh, new, like, CG, and there's Kefka, like, rendered, wow. And then it's like...
I didn't have a Super Nintendo.
And it
so
came,
like,
it came with Final Fantasy V for the first time, and... A disc that was soundtrack, like actual game music for both games.
What?
Yeah, true.
Yeah,
Was that a that must have been like a first release? You guys got to remember, I am young, and I bought this like Greatest Hits in like 2002.
It might not have included it. I got when it came out. I was looking forward to this so badly because I so desperately wanted to play Final Fantasy V in this game, which was my favorite, probably my favorite game at that point besides Metroid.
You were mentioning how like the game opens up with Terra. Eventually, you know, you get like this big cast of people that totals out to 14, but at about the midpoint, you lose all the people that you have, and then suddenly, for the second half of the game, one of the people that you got suddenly becomes, like, the new quote-unquote main character, like, the one that becomes mandatory. So this is a game that has two main characters, and they're both ladies?
That's a good point. I never thought about that. It didn't strike me as all that weird at the time, but it kind of was.
You know, it's funny, it's funny you say that, too, because I, like, when I was, you know, very, like, younger and stuff, I was like, Terra is the protagonist, and then Locke comes in, and I'm like, oh, okay, Locke's the protagonist, because Terra's the, you know what I mean? And
yeah. So we could all admit that we all named Locke after ourselves, right?
I did not like Locke.
Oh, no.
I did not use him. I thought he was a chump.
Well, good, because I actually named Edgar after myself. I was baiting you all.
There was no Xerxes in this game, believe it or not.
I never renamed anyone. Yeah,
So I named. I played through a lot of this game with my best friend at the time in high school, and I named Edgar myself. He named Locke after himself. Excuse me. And you named it after all people we knew and such. So I was invested in Edgar a bit, you know, just because of that. But
He used to be my profile picture for many years.
The reason that I didn't rename anyone is because I renamed Kane to the name of my friend who loaned me FF4 to play it, and then really regretted that. So I actually did that again.
I always like to tell the story really quick while we're on the subject of bad Final Fantasy names. So I was playing Diablo about the same time I was playing Final Fantasy VIII. And you can rename the summons in Final Fantasy VIII. So I got Ifrit. I'm like, oh my god, that's Diablo. I'm going to rename him Diablo. And then, not an hour
later,
you
rub the lamp.
And then I rub the lamp, and it's like, hey, I got a new guy, and his name is Diablos. Huh. That's going to get real confusing.
Yeah. So, my main thing is I named Setzer Trent, because he looked like Trent Reznor. we thought it was really funny, and but he does look like Trent Reznor. He's my favorite character, by the way, though. Yeah, that's true.
Well, no.
You know what I like, too, about getting the game, too, is that every character had their own thing. Like, they weren't your typical classes where, somebody casts magic and someone does like, Sabin had, you could input fighting game inputs, kind of, to his thing. Cyan had, like, a charge kind of thing, right? Where, like, if you waited long enough, his attack, sword tech kept going up. Gao was kind of a blue magic person, right? Where he could, like...
Gao's a blue mage.
Yeah, but, like, not just a blue mage, like, in any sort
He's
of, like...
a blue mage berserker.
Mimic berserker.
So basically, there's kind of an issue Square had with Final Fantasy II, where they want a story where you don't know what'll happen to the characters, but it also means you lose control over like any sort of strategy element insofar as what party can I bring with me. But now Final Fantasy III VI comes in, and it's like, okay, now we're gonna keep the cast around almost all of them. So there's less tension because nobody really dies or goes away. One exception.
Go ahead.
So Shadow, actually. It's optional. But I forgot where we're
talking. Yeah, that's if you screw up.
Yeah. So it's like, it's sort of interesting in that regard, but it's very different, again, from everything that came before it.
And everything that came after. Like, I was thinking about this. Because after this, everyone sort of becomes like blank slates in Final Fantasy, or they become super-de-duper classes, like Final Fantasy 9 or 10. Like, that's what really kind of makes Final Fantasy VI stand out from the series, even, like, looking at it back today, is that everyone actually has, like, can be ranked based on what they actually do, as opposed to, like, maybe their slight stat growths and everything. Because, like, Cyan sucks, for example, whereas Sabin, you just always keep in your party.
I don't know about that. Like, later on in the game, I think it makes sense to kind of have different parties for different things. And the main issue with the game, I would say, is that it's broke as hell, but that's kind of the same with all Final Fantasy games up to a certain point, at least.
At that era, 6 on, they pretty much just get broken.
I mean, the Vanish X-Zone or the Vanish Doom trick is legendary at this point.
Yeah, I was hoping we could mention that.
I mean, I think, like, 5 is probably the best mechanically of the classic Final Fantasy.
I agree, yeah.
RPG-wise, this does a lot of cool things, but, like,
it's
you
not
know.
Great to revisit, like, if you want to just play re-gameplay. Like, I've been kind of replaying them as an adult, And this one I kind of got back to, and I'm like, oh, this is just straight. Like, I know exactly what's good in this game.
It's the best classic Final Fantasy or classic JRPG story. Like,
yes,
the main thing is that it's not too heavy handed. It doesn't give you, but it packs so much emotion into these little tiny characters. One of the interesting things about this game that is different from all the other 2D Final Fantasies before it is that they made sure that so in Final Fantasy 4 and 5, I believe, the sprite, they had two different sprites for the characters. So there was a sprite that would be on the battle screen that was bigger.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was the overworld sprite. What Final Fantasy 6 did was it made sure that the sprite that was on the overworld was actually pretty expressive, or the map sprite, right?
Yeah.
And they had bunch of different expressions, really quite a few.
And they reacted when there's this, pretty close to
when they're, it was close, but it wasn't quite the
not
same.
Quite. Final Fantasy V
has more expression than 4, where every expression is spin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy V has like laughing sprites for everybody.
Yeah.
Shock, surprise, depression, shock.
But
yeah, I think 6 probably has.
With 6, they're all very detailed. It looks like they make sure that, because there's no cutscenes, right? So everything happens in the game itself. And it really.
There's cutscenes in the sense of like non gameplay, but there's no cutaway to like
better
see. It's all exactly the same.
There's only in the anthology release.
You have to realize, too, like, this is carrying a lot of weight for these two cell sprites. Like, Celeste tries, like, more or less, like, attempts suicide at one point. She jumps off a cliff. That's heavy for that kind of sprite art, right?
It gets, it's a dark-ass game. This game is, I mean, it's not, like, something where I feel like people who are in, like, if you're not, like, even if you're, like, in a bad place in your life, you're not going to feel bad for playing this game. It doesn't get that dark, but it is a very serious game.
But it's like an opera, almost.
Speaking of opera, you say.
Well, yes, I use that word very particularly.
It's like, but there's, like, scenes that they're very funny. Like, Locke's like, that's treasure hunt. Like, I'm not a thief, I'm a treasure hunter. Well, that's a funny little running gag. Moogles are cute. And then there's shit like I mentioned, and then there's other things with, like, Terra. And then Locke's quote-unquote legendary treasure, meaning, you know, his dying girlfriend or, you know, all that.
That's why I like the word opera, because it's all very heightened. Like, it's when it's sad, it's really sad. When it's funny, it's really funny. You know what I mean?
Or how about you get Cyan, his wife and child are dead, and then you go on the Phantom Train, and they board, and he runs after it. I'm sorry.
It's
tragic. It's really tragic.
It's pathos, right?
Yeah,
it's like
the word.
It's an idea of the characters. It's not, and because it doesn't shift into like, you know, like a cutscene, like a proper like, you know, PlayStation cutscene, right? Like Final Fantasy VII would, because it doesn't do that. It actually makes it work better because you're not taken out of the. It's not forcing you to feel anything. It's forcing you to imagine something.
Yes,
you're using the power of the imagination. You're like. All you see are, you see a flashback earlier, like Cyan talks about his family, right? Cyan is awesome because he's like a, basically like a Spanish samurai, basically. He's like a cross between like Zoro and like Zatoichi or type Sanjiro
like
character, right?
Sakaguchi, now that I think
of it. Yeah, he's got like a very big bushy mustache. He wears like a suit of like European style armor. He is awesome. Not the best character to play in the game, but he does have some really powerful attacks. It's beside the point. His whole family was slaughtered. And at a certain point, you have to go on to the ghost realm, which is what in this game, in this mythology, I suppose, that departed spirits take to go to the afterlife. And you've got to get on this train, and it's got the most somber music. And it really has like a certain point it stops and has a hiss, and like they do so much with sound in this game. And then you see these they're basically generic sprites, I think, that get on the train, but the way Cyan reacts, he talks about them. He says, you know, I can't remember exactly what he says, but he recognizes them as his family. He has to jump, he wants to chase after them, and all you're seeing is just a little map sprites moving around.
Yeah, it's so good.
It is so
chilling to the bone. Like I could watch, I could watch Aeris get killed all day long. Like it doesn't affect me at the in the slightest.
Just break out the popcorn.
So you could gut her like a trout. I do not care. I never care. Not because I didn't like the character, but because it's nakedly manipulative.
Well, you could argue.
In this game, it's forcing you to deal with your own imagination, which is where all your real emotions come
from. A neat little fun fact about that scene. There's a point right after it all happens, and you're standing there, and you can walk around, but you can't open the menu. It's about the only place in the game you can't do that.
Yeah.
And it's bizarre, and I have no idea. It's one of those things that gets talked about a lot.
It's a scene, too. You can't advance it. Like, it's there.
Oh, yeah, it just times out.
Kind of just reflect a bit, and then if Shadow's there, he'll tell you, leave him alone, like, to Cyan. If you try to talk to him, you get the standard sort of just ellipses, and then you just have to sit there for a bit, and then it fades out, and you're back at the world at like nothing.
And when you find out more about Shadow, you understand even more about why he understands this. The game also has some really funny characters and really, really imaginative and whimsical ideas. It's got airships like every Final Fantasy, but in this game, the airships are so much cooler. It's got the coolest airship ever, the Blackjack, which is owned by Setzer, right? Which is a flying casino. I kid you not. But then in, the second half of the game where it's kind of like, it's a darker, part of the story, you got to get a second airship because your airship was destroyed and it still belongs to Setzer. It's his original airship. And there's this whole backstory that goes into it. And it is, it's like, this is a character who nobody was meant to.
Friends, but yeah.
Right. Well, I don't want to. But it's like you go through, he's a throwaway character up to that point. Right. But then at the end, it's implied, I think, that he is actually the one who ends up with Celes, not Locke, by the way.
Is it?
Yes.
It's been a long time since I've beaten that game, I guess.
Hold on a minute. Celes is how you pronounce it?
I don't know how you pronounce it. That's how I pronounced it.
I always said
you pronounce it. Wait, how did you pronounce a
Celeste?
Sabin? Like, how did you pronounce that again?
Sabin. I said Sabin.
That's got to be
wrong. No, he said Sabine. We heard you.
I said Sabine?
It's Sabin.
Yeah, I always just go with Mathias because that's what his actual name is. Not
I actually named him Mash because Mash is
actually
the best name.
Aerith. Okay.
yes, it is.
So, I don't know. I can't remember where I got this from, but I remember at the time, all my buddies on AOL and stuff where we were talking about this game when it was new, we realized, oh my God, I think Setzer ends up with, not Celes, with Terra.
Yeah.
But
it's kind of out of left field,
but he's the one who kind of like rushes through her when they catch her on the airship at the end and all that. But,
it's not a thing I've ever paid attention to, so I'd have to pay attention to that again. But that's
anyway, he's my favorite, but he's a throwaway character up until a certain point in the game.
And then he's
met. And then suddenly he becomes incredibly sympathetic and like, serious character. Shadow is kind of the same, the ninja, but it just goes on and on and on. The game has so much stuff in it. For a game with as many characters as it has, the fact that it makes you feel anything about these little munchkins on the screen is insane. It's crazy.
And it's funny because, again, there's so much like, the opera is just blows you away, I think, the first time you see it. Because, again, on Super Nintendo sound chip, and then all of a sudden, there's like the synthesized, And it's probably something if you watch it now, you can't appreciate.
No,
it.
I don't think
like
so.
Garbage,
yeah.
But like at the time, it was like the Memorex commercial that happening to you.
And there's some serious fourth wall poking happening in that scene, too, that whole segment, because that's where you're dealing with Ultros yet again, who's like the guy, the evil octopus who is always he shows up probably every 3 hours in the game, and if you're playing normally,
3 hours in every game, let's be honest.
Yeah, and okay. He shows up and he's just an evil octopus. He has no real point, but he's very silly. And the thing is, he decides he's going to kill how did you pronounce her name?
Celes.
Yeah. I don't know about
Celeste. Celestial.
Yeah, okay.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right. Sorry, so he decides he's going to
look up the con.
I don't care. He decides he's going to kill her by dropping a weight on her.
Yes, that's from, the best from the
16 rafters. Ton weight.
And it's like a Looney Tunes style. And he says, "Oh, this is heavy. It's going to take me exactly 3 minutes to push."
Yeah. And exactly is in the line. It's amazing.
It is great, yeah.
And, okay, so We mentioned the game was broke. We mentioned like Vanish Doom, Vanish X Zone. There's the Dinosaur Forest, which you guys talked about.
This game is one of the buggiest games that Square ever released on the SNES, with SD3 probably being the most. And like, there's like, you could play a drinking game and kill yourself with the bugs in FF6.
Oh, you can wipe your cartridge too.
It's possible to get absolutely godlike characters too at the end of the game, where like nothing can stop you. There's the whole like X Fight Genji Glove thing, where Genji Glove is where you allows
dual wielding
anybody to dual wield, so you attack twice each turn. X Fight, I think, is a I'm not sure if that's a relic that you equip.
It's a relic.
Yeah. Yep. So you do that and it lets you attack four times. So if you have the Genji Glove, X Glove, you attack eight times. You give it to Sabin, as I called him, but apparently he's not called that to wieners. It's just like he just wrecks everything. And there's so many exploits like this in the game that just allow you to
Captain Tiger Claws.
Yeah, you just wreck everything, and you can level up to just absurd, ridiculous amounts of power. But that's kind of the fun, because it's just like, at a certain point, you play the game three times. Like, why don't you just try to break it over your knee? There's other cool stuff. Like, there's the Coliseum where you can bet your own items, including items that are irreplaceable. And sometimes you'll get back items that are even better. What's the ultimate sword that you can trade and get the Illumina? Weapon. Yeah.
The Ragnarok.
The Ragnarok sword, which is really not easy to get, right?
Yeah, and then they give you the Illumina, which I'm not certain what that's supposed to be.
The Illumina is just better. That's all. It's like it. It's just slightly better. It has holy. There's the Magicite aspect, where they've got the Espers, the magical creatures that get basically boiled down to their like amber essence, right? Like these weird rocks. It's Materia, but it's before Materia.
It's worse than Materia.
I like it better than Materia. What I like about it is that you could just give a character Magicite and they learn stuff.
Oh, that's right. Magic. I forgot that. Yeah.
See, like, the whole Magicite thing is kind of one of those points where mechanically the game kind of breaks down for me in a not good way. Because, it's at that point that everyone stops being unique. Like,
well, at least
Terra and Celis stop being your only people with magic, and suddenly, you know, you've got Mr. Burly Hulk over there throwing lightning.
True, like, but the game does get really, really hard towards the end. So I think.
Dude, what?
What?
You don't think so?
F6 is like chump-tastic. What are you talking
about? I accidentally the last boss, like most of his forms.
Oh, come on, man. The Fallen One, that's no picnic.
No,
it is. If you give the quad attack thing to Locke and he's got the Valiant Knife, he's getting all nine.
Yeah, but you figure that out when exactly.
The first time I played it, when I was 12.
Okay, good for you, genius. But for normal people, we didn't figure out these exploits right away.
I think it depends, too, on whether or not you consider these breaking things like flaws, which they almost certainly are in a sort of clinical sense, but like, if you were going to play the RPG again, it is kind of fun to like kind of test the boundaries.
Well,
exactly.
Like that. But I guess if you consider that an accidental feature, then
at a certain point, the game becomes like a visual novel with incredibly broken JRPG combat.
So. The breakdown for me comes from the fact that at the outset, everyone is distinct and then becomes homogenous, more or less.
Okay.
Whereas in like FF5, everyone is the same and then becomes different depending on how you decide to build.
Yes. If you choose to do that, like,
but let's fair, right? That's like, this is where it gets tricky, because FF5, you can break it over your.
Oh game. Yes, yeah, exactly.
Like, that's crazy how much.
I'm not saying that breaking a game over your knee is bad. That's one of the reasons say 8 is the best FF on PlayStation. We'll get to that argument another day. But in the context of FF6, I feel that it loses a coherency that it had, and that kind of, I feel, is a blow against it.
I mean, I don't think there is a Final Fantasy game up to this point, and even slightly afterwards, at least, that wasn't kind of totally broke ass. You know, like, that's just what they were. The point was, they were building up to something where, at a certain point, it becomes telling a grand story with deep characters, whereas Dragon Quest kind of went the opposite direction, where it was telling, like, kind of not really that impressive a broad story. It has a bunch of little episodes, and the characters almost don't even matter. You know what I mean?
See, if I had been here...
Okay.
There's like a time context to it too, right? Because I'm sure someone can go back and say, oh, well, look, this story is not great, FF6 or whatever, which I still think it's pretty good. But it's like you have to understand for back then, this was like mind-blowing. This was like, oh my gosh, there's so much to this, right?
I think
and I give that.
Yeah. I think if you are even slightly interested in like retro games and like just playing, like if you bought an SNES classic, God help you. Like,
if you made that stupid decision.
No, it's not a stupid decision, but like the thing is, if you're a kid and that's your introduction to this kind of thing, it's like, besides, you know, ROMs and all that, but playing it on a TV and like if you can get into it, that kind of thing, it's I like this. This is something, it's not my history, it's not my nostalgia, but I like this kind of abstraction, which is what it is. It's just
so. I think everyone.
This is the best thing that you can, if you want to see whether a like little tiny, like, you know, what are they, like two tile tall, like little munchkin sprites can
16
make you,
by 36, yeah, not by 32.
How bad or good do you think they can make you feel? That's what this really is about. Like,
okay, so
if we're talking
Go ahead.
Yeah, you got it.
I think Final Fantasy VI is a game that everybody who has any sort of remote interest in seeing the evolution of video games should play once. And it holds almost nothing after that.
Let me ask you this. Play or watch?
Play. I think you should play it. Because like I said, this was one of the first games I learned how to break, like RPGs. Because I was like, wait, I can equip this and equip this, and then I get to attack 8 times, and
that's fun.
Oh, with this weapon.
See, that's fun.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's worth playing once in your life.
But did you, I mean, okay, so you're a weirdo who did that the first time you played it, but most people didn't.
I was going to say, I'm a big math nerd, though. I'm the kind of, when I played it, I'll be honest, I was so interested in the story beats that I really tried not to pay as much attention to gameplay, which is a big failing of mine in the early Final Fantasy games. So I would just be like, all right, I'll grind until I can see the next thing happen.
Yeah.
You know, like,
if you play the game without doing a walkthrough, which I understand is like not the way people play JRPGs nowadays, but used to be the norm. And when you did that, you would level up just enough to get farther in the game. There are so many cool, and the thing is, it's got set pieces out the ass,
really good ones.
Zozo, the town, right, Zozo, what the hell is that?
It's
like a slum town with this crazy thing, it's always raining.
It's like the one unique
people town that lie all the time.
My friend Heidi Kemp, she writes a lot for gaming.moa.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Throw down my credentials.
She's too good for the show, but she'd love to have
her. No, she isn't. I have a funny. Well, anyway, but no, she's. I've heard her name on the podcast before, too, and I was like, oh, Heidi, I know her. Yeah. So, she wrote a really cool article once called Why Every Final Fantasy Game is the Best and the Worst. She only goes up to 10.
Oh, I remember that.
Oh, yeah. I think I read this one.
She made a good, I think, case for 6, which is her worst thing was she goes 3 words, World of Ruin. Which,
yes!
I do think the game goes from, it's funny because it's now non-linear, which is usually the complaint about RPGs, but it's bleak, it's a little samey, honestly. Like,
it becomes a Dragon Quest game after the World of Ruin.
It does, and that's what's cool about it, because it gives you something different.
But it's not a very good Dragon Quest game.
I don't care. It gives you, and it gives you this at a time where we had no Dragon Quest games for the Super Nintendo. Okay, now we've got everything, okay? You live in a magic land where everything's perfect, but back in the old days...
Well, I'm sorry we can't all be old men. I'll be there soon enough, and I'll be talking to Xerxes Jr. about these things or whatever the hell
you will.
Good call.
Where are we going to put this? Where are we going to put this? I'll let Heidi have the last word on that, because that's an excellent point. Although I do think the World of Ruin is actually where a lot of the strongest storytelling stuff happens in the game.
By virtue of that's where a lot of like loose threads wrap up.
But it's
in the laziest way possible.
But it's stuff that you didn't even realize were loose threads. And there's always something to find out. You find out what happens, like, where did Gao come from, you know? Like, find that out. Like, nobody even thought about that. It was like, actually, they put that in there. Okay.
You got me on this now.
All right.
Really quick, the World of Balance is really cool because you go through this whole quest or whatever to go stop the Empire, and you meet these people and you learn their stories as you're following along this big main plot. What I hate about the World of Ruin is you just kind of get thrown into this world. It's like, okay, go find your people and solve their stories. And you lose that whole neat, coherent thread through everything. And you can just end the game if you want
to. Aimlessness of it. The fact that there's very little direction after you get through the first segments of it is what makes it feel so powerful, is because it's like, no, like, I don't want to go too far into the story here again, but basically you screw it up is what happens.
Well, yeah.
You think the game is over, and then the game continues in the wasteland that you created.
But Final Fantasy VI, like, its strongest point is it's a plot, you know?
It puts you on this neat little thing. It does stuff with that. It pulls the rug out from under your feet because the whole game built, the first half of the game is building up this evil empire, right?
Yeah.
After that part, there isn't an evil empire, right?
Do you know what? I think there's a lot to it, too, in the sense of, and we're not doing spoil. Well, whatever. I won't spoil it, I guess. How the big bad comes, how Kefka, you realize, how that happens in that particular set piece is pretty shocking and awesome. And I think when he jumps from comedy, like, goof character, when he says, like, he gets something from a town, I forget exactly what, and he goes, I don't care for this pitiful little hamlet, so burn it. And he's like, that's like, oh shit, this guy is the best villain.
Yes!
Yeah. Oh,
remember, going to point out that he's not all clowns and jokes. He is the first scene, and then the Doma scene happens, and that was the point where I knew at, like, you know, being like 12 or 13 or whatever I was when I played this, and I go, oh, this guy's the villain.
Yeah, that's a point where you realize that, oh, he's the guy that even the bad guys don't like. Like, at a certain point,
there
he becomes like, all the bad guys.
On my boot!
The light of judgment. Remember that part in the World of Ruin? He's just got like a death ray that he just aims at people indiscriminately. and all you see is the consequences. All you see is the consequences, but it makes you realize, oh, this is what everybody's life is like now because you suck. Because you failed.
I was going to say, I have an idea of ranking stuff, and I have an easy question and a hard question. Yep. Okay? Easy question. Better than Final Fantasy VII?
Yes. Yeah.
Nope. I was saying yes,
I say yes, and simply because Final Fantasy VII doesn't really do anything that this game doesn't, and it does, and what it accomplishes, it does with so much more at its disposal. Whereas this game really, it feels a lot more emotional, and it does it with so much less. It's kind of like when you see like a silent film that is remade as like a classic film in the sound era, where it's like, yeah, I mean, it's more engaging in a way, but it's because you can hear people talk. But when you couldn't, they actually did a lot more with it. You know, there was a bigger challenge.
It was a lot with a little. Like, Final Fantasy... Well, I had mentioned this in earlier, and it's like, when there was a review of Final Fantasy VIII came out, and it was... The negative they said was how the mighty have sunk to the merely great. Because in the West, every Final Fantasy was just hugely better than the last. I think I even said that earlier. But VII was, like, the last great, great one. And I know, like, you know, there's thoughts about it now in retrospect.
Right,
like,
yeah, you're right, though, yeah.
Yeah, that's the last, like, 8 and beyond, it's like, they're good, they get better, but not like the previous. I don't know if that's...
That's true. Like, after Final Fantasy VII, and really Final Fantasy Tactics, if we're honest, like, that had a pretty big impact at the time, too.
Tactics is cheating, because that's Tactics Ogre with the Final Fantasy skin on it.
Yeah, but you know what? It had a story to it, and... That's what people really care about. The Final Fantasy gameplay has never been that great except for Final Fantasy V and possibly 3.
I'm interested in what the hard question was.
I know what the hard question is, and it's going to be Chrono Trigger, I'm guessing.
Oh, actually, it was Earthbound, because that's number 20.
Oh, now we're fighting.
Okay, so that is where the real battle
happens. That's where I'm going to have to go with a no.
I'm not letting you go past Chrono Trigger. I see myself...
Where's Chrono Trigger?
It's 29.
Ooh.
I think it's better than Chrono Trigger. Chrono Trigger is a better game in the gamerson sense, but like
Final Fantasy VI is super important historically, and that's about it.
All right, just to bound us, does anyone say it's better than Earthbound? I would probably give the nod to Earthbound.
I would give the nod to Earthbound just because of the originality of Earthbound.
So it sounds like if Earthbound is definitely a ceiling, then yeah, we have to go to Chrono Trigger, and is it better than that? And that's where I'm a little...
Well, it's got
to
be... Look, it's either above or below Chrono Trigger, then.
Yeah,
so you can't put it below Shinobi 3, because, whatever.
Yeah, like I said, I lost this fight. Chrono Trigger just holds up so much better.
Chrono Trigger does, and I would say that... but I don't think that there's... The thing is, there's a lot of memorable stuff about both of these games. They came out at approximately the same time.
Yeah, like
but
a year.
So Final Fantasy VI is doing so much more with so much less. It's the same thing, right?
So here's the rock and hard place I'm stuck in. On the one hand, I don't like Chrono Trigger. I like FF6 more. On the other hand, I think Dragon Quest V is a more emotionally compelling game than Final Fantasy VI. And I would have been able to put that argument forward if I had been able to been on that show. I want V to be the highest of all of them, so I don't want to put it too high.
Okay. Guys, wait, I'm going to put Final Fantasy XII at the top of this list.
Okay, right.
You're trying to break the podcast, just like Final Fantasy VI players with the
yes.
All right,
right, number one
okay,
game.
Look, all right, so what
in
about...
my circles, we call it Quad Strike and Spellblade, thank you.
Okay, the more I'm thinking about it, the more I want to put it, because look, we got Crash Team Racing, which has to be worse than Final Fantasy VI, because
yeah, I'm not letting
whatever.
You try this one on, otherwise we're not putting this above Final Fantasy Tactics.
All right, so where is Final Fantasy Tactics?
It's far too low.
Yeah, so it's going to go above it.
For FF6 being on 29 exactly.
Okay, I'm going to put it out there. I personally would put it right below Earthbound and above Silent Hill 2.
No. No, 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 no.
I can't remember a damn thing about Silent Hill 2. Whereas,
what?
No, I remember everything, and it's been like 6 years since I've played that game.
I could... Oh, man, I love FF6, but I might want to fight you on that.
Okay, so Steins Gate. Does it go below Silent Hill, above Steins Gate?
Killing me.
I'm in the middle of Steins Gate. Oh, no. No, Cave Story. Let's talk about Cave Story quick.
Oh,
I like Cave Story more.
I do like... You like Cave Story more?
Please, for the love of God, above Crash Team Racing.
Sure.
Holy shit. What is going on with that?
Above Chrono Trigger, though. That's... No.
Look, Chrono Trigger is great. And they're so close together. Does it really matter?
A little.
My point is everybody knows Chrono Trigger. Chrono Trigger is still a game that comes up a lot. Let me finish here.
Okay.
It's a game that comes up a lot. Chrono Trigger is a game that people still talk about a lot. Final Fantasy VI has kind of disappeared from the conversation, and I think that is a reason to promote it a little bit more, because it is something that if you really care about the way that just video games and the abstraction of 2D games and stuff and sprite art and all that, all the stuff you could accomplish with it, you get so much from having played Final Fantasy VI.
All right,
above Chrono Trigger, because I kind of like them right next to each other.
Toe Jam and Earl, though.
I mean,
it's good, but
it's Chrono Trigger, damn it.
But here's one thing I will say too. Outside of the mechanics of V, and I don't know a lot about 2 and 3. To be honest, we're going back to Japanese numbering, by the way.
2 sucks. 3 is pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah. 3 is awesome.
2 is interesting and neat.
6 is really the first big risk for the Final Fantasy series. Would you say that?
Yeah.
No. I mean, look, they were all fantasy games, right? They were all like you kind of knew what you were getting. Now
I know where you're going with this argument, and I'm just kind of pondering it. I'm turning it on.
Final Fantasy VI is the highest expression of the 2D Final Fantasy concept. It is a
Chrono Trigger is so hard.
Chrono Trigger, like I said, it like on the merits, maybe Chrono Trigger is a little bit better. But the thing is that Chrono Trigger is just very popular to this day. It's still very popular. Final Fantasy VI is vanishing before our very eyes. Are you going
to
let that happen?
I feel like I have to make Silent Hill 2 a ceiling too, because I feel like Silent Hill 2 is unequivocally considered maybe the top horror game ever created. Whereas FF6, I think you would get although I think it's the best Final Fantasy, if you were to say this is the best JRPG, this is the best in class genre, you're going to have contention.
That's true. Well, I mean, we already have Earthbound.
I can agree with that argument.
All right, so let's put it, you want to say below Silent Hill 2 above Steins Gate, or should we go a little bit lower and put it below
Cave Story?
I'm maintaining
exactly on 29. You know, you all can figure out what you want
okay,
to put it.
So,
I mean, I'm with Word on that, I guess.
Okay, so it sounds like it's between the two people who want to put it higher. How do we compromise, Beef?
Is this time for you to break out the bottle cap that claims to be a coin?
What about... All right, wait, how is this as a compromise? How about... And this is... I just want you to know I am sacrificing something here. What about 27 above Bloodborne, aka the best game that was ever made?
You know, I'm willing to say that FF6 is
better than Bloodborne. It's got to go above Crash Team Racing, period. Below Cave Story, above Crash Team Racing. That's my final offer. Crash Team Racing is Crash Team Racing.
Crash Team Racing is awesome, dude.
It's accessible.
Better than like Biotic Commando, Crash Team Racing.
You see what I'm saying? Like, do you see what I'm saying?
I'm sorry.
Name me a better kart racer than Crash Team Racing.
Third strike is.
No, let's not. That's where it's going. It's going above Crash Team Racing. Come on, man. Below Cave Story.
Just putting it there just despite Bob, who's not even in this conversation.
All right, hold on. Wait, so we have... all right, I'm sorry. All right. Who's in agreement, Word and Clade?
Yep.
You both want it at 29?
Correct.
We want it above 29 somewhere. All right, so if we agree, then we can do a coin. So
yeah. Please. Okay.
Yes.
All right. You want to say... All right. All right, I'll see... Bionic Commando hurts me a little, but all right, okay.
I'm going to say that the coin flipping goes to Clade this time, though, because a bottle cap is not a coin, Xerxes. You have lost your coin privileges.
When did I flip a bottle cap?
Look, I'm just saying 27... 27 is the midpoint of 25 and 29. I'm just saying. But, okay. But if you want to flip the coin, flip the coin. I think we have to.
Okay, give me a second to grab a coin.
Is this the widest coin berth? We're arguing over four whole spots. We can't fight it down.
Oh, no, we've had, coin flips over, 40 pages.
Slow beef, as the resident celebrity, you pick heads or tails?
I'll say heads.
All right, it's going to land on the ground. And it is heads.
Yeah!
Wins again. Where I don't know what that means.
Eat a dick, Crash Team Racing!
we'll compromise right above Crash Team Racing.
The game that's Mario Kart, except it has a bandicoot.
It's like racist towards Cal.
And right,
it actually has
right
like,
below Cave Story.
It actually
that's
has polygon models instead of just a bunch of sprites that look like polygons.
Yeah, so it looks hideous, is what you're saying.
Quote Bob, Crash Team Racing is better than Chrono Trigger.
Think about that for a second and weep. Weep, my friend.
That's like quantum mechanics where it's like science, but you don't really understand.
Yeah, no, it's all really made up. So thus ends our first two-part episode.
Yeah, we have things where everything was orderly and then everything devolved into chaos, the worlds of balance and ruin.
Holy
Lord. Couldn't have put it better myself. Rescue the ninja. Goodbye, everybody.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rude, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know, I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord, but most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.